Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Thank you very much, Dave Schwann. Steve Bertrand here. We always bring Dave Schwann in on opening day for the Chicago
to cover
White Sox.
The snow, right, on opening day, so for baseball.
Nice to see snow and Dave Schwann on a Friday
good
afternoon.
Good to see you, Steve Bertrand. Thank
Steve
you.
Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we got a lot going on. Steve Case, the co-founder for AOL, will be here a little bit later. He has a new book. He talks about the beginning of AOL as the first wave of the Internet. He says, now, you know, we are in the second wave now. We'll talk about that later. But he's describing what he thinks will be the third wave. And I bring that up because Andrea Haines is in the studio, the editor for Blue Sky Innovation, as she is each Friday. Andrea, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
One of the first companies I want to talk about is Opternative. And I wonder if maybe, and I'll talk to Steve about this later, whether Opternative might be an example of this third wave. Because he says, look, the second wave is this idea that people create an app, and you buy it, and it's Angry Birds or something, and you sell ads to promote it, or you sell it to someone else, and that's what you do. The third wave, he says, is when you are going to be much more fully integrated in government, in business, in daily lives, and it's going to be more than just sort of throwing something out there. And maybe that's where Opternative is now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're one of the most interesting companies that we cover at Blue Sky because they are kind of on that leading edge of what truly could be a disruptive model if it works. And they're just at that stage where they're fighting those battles and they're trying to make it work.
The people disrupting are fighting back. Okay, so let's take a step back. Tell me what Opternative is.
So Opternative is a Chicago-based startup that offers a fully online eye exam, meaning you can be in your home, you can be in your office, you take an exam online, and it results in a prescription for your glasses or contact lenses without you having to go to the eye doctor at all.
Now, they don't have the power to write prescriptions.
They do pair with ophthalmologists in the state where they operate in order to provide prescriptions.
So what does that mean? You get the test from Opternative, and then they send it to an ophthalmologist who writes the prescription?
Yeah, it results in a prescription. You literally can take the test on your own computer and get a prescription out of it. So being that it allows you to skip the actual in-person visit, you can see how that would be hugely disruptive to the entire industry built around you coming in, you know, to get your new prescription when you have to order new eyeglasses or new contacts.
So the industry doesn't like it, right?
The industry doesn't like it. I mean, ophthalmologists dislike it less because they have a lot of other services they provide. They're sort of watching it, I would say, with interest. Optometrists, which is the sort of, you know, layer that does a lot of this type of work, they're kind of on the front lines of really fighting back against this.
And they would argue that, look, you need more than just someone to check you for a prescription. You need an eye exam.
Yeah.
People might detect diabetes or cataracts or things like that.
Definitely. There are deeper things they look for. There are more, you know, health issues that they will look for when you're there in person.
And how does Alternative or Opternative?
Yeah.
Alternative. I didn't think of that.
That's the whole name. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's not an accident.
What are they? Oh, I'm going to be slow today. So what's their answer to that?
So they say that they still recommend the every 2-year in-person exam, so that they're not really asking you to skirt that. The industry would say, though, that, you know, the exam, you know, often it is, especially when you're younger, you don't really feel like you need the exam except that you might need the glasses. So that does bring you in.
Right.
So if you're kind of allowing people to skip that might encourage them to skip the in-person visit with bad results.
Okay, so they are in, what, 34 states?
Yes.
Indiana's been the say-no state in the past couple of years.
Yeah, Indiana became a say-no state recently. They passed a bill that will basically forbid Opternative from operating there when it goes into effect July 1st.
There's a fight now in Illinois, right? There's some movement against them.
You know, it's starting in Illinois. It's a little further advanced in states like Georgia and Michigan. Illinois, there's been a little lower level thing. It hasn't quite risen to the level of a true battle in Illinois yet. But they are operating in Illinois now.
Well, the company is called Opternative, and it is a it is a disruptor in the truest sense, I guess, right? I was listening to MSNBC this morning with Mayor Emanuel's brother. It's not Ezekiel Emanuel, right? And he was talking about the future of healthcare. And he says the future of healthcare is going to be doctors now going to people's houses or seeing them via Skype, you know? And this is sort of, this is where we are. Yeah. This is the fourth wave in a way.
Yeah, and yeah, states are addressing that issue of telemedicine and in some cases specifically excluding Optrinative from that while allowing telemedicine in other areas.
And it's a thing where you've got to figure out what's right, what's good and healthy. And, you know, look, if I'm a doctor or a carpenter, whatever, I'm going to be in defense of my business. So some of my opposition is going to be more self-centered than patient-centered maybe. So you got to sort all. That's one of the things we'll be sorting out
exactly
in this third wave. We got a minute left. Tell me about, I know there's a group of entrepreneurs from Chicago heading to China to compete, right, with the idea of coming back with some cash.
They are, and this is through the Chicago Innovation Exchange, which is out of the University of Chicago. There were four teams from Chicago that made the finals and are currently in China competing for some investment money and perhaps even office space that they can use to help build their businesses, which is a sign of some increased interest from Chinese investors in Chicago.
Is the Chinese investors are a little looser with their cash?
They are, and they seem to be a little more patient. And there's areas like biotech, things where it takes a while to really develop a company that, you know, they will say the Chinese investors can be a little more patient in some cases, so they're a good potential source.
And why is that, do you think?
Just longer term, you know, view on the money that they're putting in.
All right, so these teams, they're leaving next Wednesday, or they left this Wednesday?
Actually, they left this Wednesday, so Okay. They're there now, and the finals are tomorrow. So
we'll
find out if anyone from Chicago brings home some money.
I know one of the companies, and it's Tovala, is that we've talked about them.
I know we've written about a number of these along the way, and we've probably talked about them.
And that's one of those ovens, again, that knows how to cook. I guess most ovens know how to cook food, but
it's some one are of those smarter ones than others.
Some are smarter. Michael, who do we have on earlier this week? It was June ovens, and so that was a little different. Yeah. All right, Andrea Haynes, great to see you on this Friday.
Thanks.
Clearly, I'm a little scattered at the start, but we're going to reconnect here, and we'll talk to Tom Gimbel about innovation in the workplace and encouraging people's ideas. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, and there is a special aura, sort of, in the studio this afternoon because Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network, is in the studio. Tom, welcome to the studio.
Good
I appreciate
to be with you
coming in. And, of course, the special aura is because you were named to one of the best places to work, again, by Crain Chicago Business. Frank Sennett was in earlier this week, and we talked about the list. Congratulations for that.
Thank you. It's always nice. We're very fortunate. It's been the third year in a row, and as I always say, we're only a great place to work for the people that like it.
So, well, that's okay. That wouldn't be bad. So if you don't win in the fourth, is it going to be, gnashing of teeth?
It really is. Without comparing us to some sports dynasty, the pressure to continue is worse, I think, than the pressure to get on originally.
It'd be like the Atlanta Braves if you keep people just stop showing up because they expect
all of a sudden, you know, nine National League pennants isn't enough. You got to win more than one World Series.
That's one of the things I like about you. You knew nine right away. How many people remember that? But one of the things about working in a positive atmosphere is where creativity is sort of fostered, you know, where people aren't afraid to say, hey, I've got this idea or that idea, and they don't think they're going to get laughed out of the room, right?
Well, I think the key is, you know, the expression we use at our place is don't be afraid of a bad idea, and we won't be afraid of saying, or don't be afraid of having an idea, and we won't be afraid of saying no.
Right.
And if you go under that situation, because people are want to know that it's going to be listened to, they don't always necessarily need to know that it's going to be executed on. And as management, you should always want to hear what people are thinking, but you've just got to have a good dialogue where people aren't going to feel like you're calling them stupid if the idea doesn't get executed.
That's the thing. It's the intimidation, I think. And, you know, you and I have been through this where I'm one of those guys who's more likely to say, well, I will never say that because they're going to think I'm stupid. And if you're in an encouraging atmosphere situation, you know, you get more ideas. It's all about ideas.
And working through the ideas, right? It's not, you know, we're talking off in the green room earlier with somebody about his girlfriend works at Groupon, right? The original iteration of Groupon wasn't what it is today. you know, and Facebook wasn't, and all these other things. They become what they are as a result of ideas and working through it and brainstorming sessions.
Oh, we're talking about ideas today and creativity. It's become a theme in a way. I didn't mean for it to, but Steve Case from the co-founder of AOL is going to be on the program a little bit later, and he's going to talk about what he thinks is this third wave of the Internet and where ideas go there. Before him, we're talking to Adam Grant, who wrote a book called The Originals, about original thinking. And so here we are talking about it with you as well. And one of the suggestions you have is to look to other people who you admire and see how their creativity works and try to not copy that, but maybe emulate it.
Yeah, I think there's two things. Number one, I've always said that if it isn't copyrighted or trademarked, steal it. Right? So
okay.
I'm a firm believer in that. On the other side, I think what too often we look at, and we say, if we're in banking, we look at what other banks are doing. If we're in law firms, we look at what other lawyers are doing. You don't have to do that. Great ideas of how different people run their businesses, run their careers, how they do public speaking. It's not always about within our little world. And if you get ideas from reading Inc. Magazine, Fast Company Magazine, are about entrepreneurial spirit and ideas. It can transfer into anything you do.
See what they do and see what sparks your passion.
Absolutely.
And go from there. Other thing is have real conversations, and I think that's an important thing.
I'm not afraid of that.
But that's great. I mean, it's not about, hey, oh, look at the weather, too bad, what about the White Sox? Engage in conversation.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, aside from people's political affiliations, whether it's on the far right with Trump and the far, or not, probably not the far right, but on the right with Trump and the far left with Bernie Sanders, it's creating conversation, and that's creating votes and followers, because that's what people want. They're sick of talking points. They want people who aren't afraid to maybe offend somebody and say things. And that's the same thing in the business world.
It's interesting you say that to me, because I interview a lot of people, and a lot of times politicians are celebrities, and you can tell when they're actually having a conversation with
totally.
You. Or when they're just sort of giving you the answers. And I think what I take from you saying have real conversations means listening to what's being said. You know, go a little bit deeper, engage in it, and bring something out of it.
The best thing for employee development and any career growth is thought process. Not what the thought is, but how did you get to that point? And that's what gets lost. I don't want to go too political, but that's what gets lost in the political point. Everyone says pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-gay rights, anti-gay rights. Why? Why do you think that's important? What's the fundamental belief? And in business, it's so important to find out where staff rank and file, why their thought process is what it is, and where they want to go with it.
That's Tom Gimbel. He is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network, and one of the best places to work in Chicago.
Thanks for having me.
You got
Steve.
Openings?
Always. We're
all
always
right.
Hiring.
Check it out. You can see the great website, too. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. If you've been putting off changing your web browser, you might want to listen to what Wharton School of Business professor Adam Grant has to say in his book, Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World. Or maybe you want to put it off and just think about it for a while. Adam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Thrilled to be here.
Let's start just generally. You've written before, but where is it, this idea of sort of the original or the original mind? Where did it come from, the idea to write this book?
Well, I've been working with leaders for years who are asking, how do I fight groupthink? How do I get access to new ideas? And at the same time, students are frequently wondering, if I'm not the boss in my organization, how do I speak up with a suggestion and get heard? And I realize those are two sides of the same coin, and we need to understand it better.
We tend to think of originals as fearless, of having great conviction of their ideas and, you know, everyone else be damned. But you're right, that's not really the case.
No, in fact, most of the original people in the world, the nonconformists who have driven creativity and change, were terrified, just like the rest of us are. But they were even more afraid of failing to try than they were of failing.
So did they know how to harness them? I mean, did they use their fear to their advantage?
A lot of them did. So one of my favorite examples was, I had a fascinating conversation with Elon Musk. And I wanted to know, look, you did payments. How did you then have the courage to say, I'm going to run Tesla and I'm going to build rockets?
Right.
And he said, I was sure that Tesla was not going to succeed, and that our first few, you know, launches at SpaceX would knock it off the ground. And he said, but it was too important not to try. And what he was constantly worrying about was, you know, we know there are two kinds of regrets you can have. You can regret your actions or you can regret your inactions. And in the moment, what most of us worry about is like, we're going to embarrass ourselves
we're
if we do something
our
stupid.
Actions,
exactly.
Right.
But in the long run, our biggest regrets are our inactions, the chances we didn't take.
All right, let's go to the web browsers now, because you write that you can tell about someone about their destiny to be original or tendency to be original by the web browser they use. Everyone's checking right now to see what web browser they use. Tell me about that.
Yeah, if you don't know, you should ask Jeeves. A lot of people don't like the results of this study, but this economist Michael Hausman has shown that people who use Chrome and Firefox have better job performance and stay 15% longer in their jobs on average than Safari and Internet Explorer users.
And the reason for that is?
Well, it's not a technical advantage, which most people think. It's about how you got the browser. If you use Internet Explorer or Safari, those came pre-installed on your computer, and you just accepted the default option that was handed to you. If you're a Chrome or Firefox user, you are more likely to wonder, is there a different browser out there? And then take a little initiative to get it.
Yeah, I wonder about that because I use Firefox.
Well, that's a good choice for today, at least.
But I think it was recommended to me. I didn't discover it. I mean, it wasn't an original action on my part to choose Firefox. Someone said, "Hey, you got to do this."
And here I thought you were an original.
I guess I'm getting to the fact, though, that it's... If you're unoriginal, you're not destined to never be original.
Yeah, I think a lot of people believe that originality is a fixed trait that belongs to the Steve Jobs class of people, and the rest of us, we're not like them. But I don't think it's a fixed trait at all. It's a free choice.
How does one develop originality?
Well, the easiest way is to just increase the number of ideas you generate. What happens is a lot of people just fall in love with their first idea or two, but the best way to be original is to have variety, and the easiest path to variety is volume.
Okay, that implies that I have control over the ideas I'm originating.
You do.
Tell me how I do.
You may not be aware of it, but you
right.
do.
Can I foster more then?
Yeah, so there's a great, actually, series of experiments done at Northwestern recently where people are given 10 minutes to brainstorm about new ideas, and most people come up with 10 ideas in that period, maybe 15, and then they just say, I'm out of steam.
Right.
No more ideas. Researchers give them a little nudge, and they say, you know, you've got a few more minutes. Why don't you see if you can come up with anything more? Average person more than doubles output, 20 more ideas. And that second set of 20 ideas is more original than the first 15.
So it's just a mental exercise. It's almost like a calisthenic that you need to do.
It is. The moment you feel like you've run out of ideas is the moment when you're ready to be original, because the first ideas are usually the most conventional.
That goes to the procrastination then that I mentioned at the beginning, right? Get the job done. You got something on your task list. Get it done, get it over with, move on to the next idea. You're right, that's not a good idea all the time. And your great examples, I mean, it's Gettysburg Address or I Have a Dream speech. You know, those things, they festered for a while. They weren't done and put away. Procrastination is good.
I'll tell you about it later.
Very good.
That'll
be part two of the interview.
Exactly. Maybe in a few years.
You talk to a lot of novelists, a lot of writers, and they say they like to give themselves a gift for the next day's writing. So they won't conclude a passage so that when they sit down the next day, you know, they don't start cold. They have something to continue doing. And I think you sort of did that too when you wrote this book, right? You left yourself time to fester on the thought.
It was painful agony.
Really?
Yeah, because normally when I sit down, I like to complete a thought. But having seen how when you procrastinate, it lets you incubate, it allows for divergent thinking, I thought, all right, I'm going to stop in mid-sentence, and then I've got somewhere to pick up where I left off.
And would you ever think, okay, I'm going to stop in the middle of the next sentence, because this was
yes.
going pretty well.
Many sentences got written that way. But then when I finally did stop, and I came back to it, I had all sorts of new ideas, and Reb Reveley, a great applied positive psychology expert, has a nice way of thinking about this. He says, look, to be original, you want to be quick to start, but slow to finish.
Todd Rose, his book, recent book, Beyond Average, you aware of it?
Right? I am. I read one of the blurbs on it. Yeah, it's a great book.
So one of the things he said that struck me is that not many geniuses are PhDs, because it takes sort of a divergent of interests, and PhDs are specialized. And you seem to write the same thing.
Yeah, I always assumed that the deepest experts would be the most original, but it's not those people. It's the people with the broadest experience, because they're able to look at old problems in a new way.
And so let's go to the C-suite or to the manager's office, to the hiring people, when they want originals, right? How do they recognize originals?
Multifunctional and multicultural experience are two great predictors.
Okay.
So if somebody has not just been in marketing but also in finance, you're going to get more lenses to use as you solve different kinds of problems. You can also look at whether people have a lot of bad ideas. If you take seriously the idea that quantity of ideas is good for ultimate quality, then the more bad ideas somebody has, the better their chance of stumbling on a good one.
There was a Michael Keaton movie from the 80s, maybe, was it? With Henry Winkler, I'm an idea man, Chuck. You remember that line?
I do. Which is a code for I don't have to do any work.
I'm an idea man, Chuck. But what I remember was that he had a lot of really bad ideas, bad character. But you're saying that really could be a sign of something good.
It could, because you know the greatest originals, whether it's in business or art or any realm, what we see is they didn't have better ideas than their peers. They just had more of them.
Adam Grant is the writer, the author of the book Originals: How Nonconformists Move the World. I knew we'd cover a lot of topics. I did not think Michael Keaton or Henry Winkler would come up.
Well done.
And it's nice to meet you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson and Dave Schwann and Laura Vaughn as well. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 12:51 on this Friday afternoon, opening day on the south side of Chicago, which is certainly an indication that it will snow, and it is here in Chicago. Steve Case is one of the great minds, really, of the late 20th century or 21st century, co-founder of AOL, and continued to develop after that. He's got a new book out called The Third Wave of the Internet, and he joins the Business Lunch now. Mr. Case, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Was that sucking up a little too much, calling you one of the great minds of the century?
I like that. I got to record that. Send it to my parents or something. They'll be proud of me.
And I think I was one of the – I work here at Tribune Company, and Tribune Company had a partnership with AOL very early on. So I was one of the pretty early subscribers to AOL. I was SKB, my initials at AOL.com, back when you could try to pick your own.
Yeah, we had a great relationship with Tribune. They actually bought a stake, about 10% stake in AOL before it went public, so probably 25 years ago. Yeah. And we did a partnership around digital cities and electronic newspapers. So we're very, very appreciative of the confidence Tribune had in us, and everybody in Chicago really were part of that AOL story, part of the story of the birth of the Internet.
Okay, that's the first wave. The second wave, you say, is where we are now, where people are creating apps, maybe, right? They're creating an app that someone's going to buy something from, or they're going to sell the app, or they're going to sell ads for people to use the app. That's sort of where we are now.
The first wave, call it 85 to 2000, was really just building the Internet, building awareness of the Internet, getting everybody connected to the Internet. The second wave has been building apps and services on top of the Internet. So that's Facebook and Twitter and Google and Waze and many other apps. But the third wave, which is just breaking now, it's why I decided to write this book and kind of lay out a way to think about the future, is going to integrate the Internet seamlessly and pervasively in every aspect of our lives. So it's really going to change healthcare and education and transportation and energy and food and financial services in pretty profound ways. But it's going to require a different mindset and a different playbook. And so I decided, after thinking about writing a book for 20 years, finally put some pen to paper, and it was great to have the book come out this week.
It's about time you accomplished something. Is that what you're telling
us? Exactly. Now, finally, I can say I'm an author.
We were talking earlier in the program about this company called Opternative, and it's an online eye test where you can look at it and get an eye exam, essentially. It's not recognized in a lot of states. A lot of states are fighting it, but it does have partnerships in 35 states with ophthalmologists, where you can take their test online and then go get a prescription. They're in trouble. They're running in trouble with ophthalmologists, I think. Some optometrists don't like it. The FDA doesn't like it. And I just wonder, reading about what you say about the third wave, if this is one of those examples of an Internet developer that's going to have to integrate in so many more ways than they do in the second wave. It's going to be much more intertwined with what we do.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a perfect example of what's going to happen more and more in the third wave. It's an innovative product that starts with software. Starts in this case with an app with an internet connection, but really is changing the way something in health is done. And in order to really drive that adoption, it's going to require more partnerships than we saw in the second wave, more engagement with government on policy and regulations than we saw in the second wave, and also more perseverance, because some of these are going to be difficult problems to solve. And that's why I wrote the book. I try to lay out this roadmap and basically encourage entrepreneurs to take on some of these tough challenges, like improving our way healthcare is delivered, or improving the way our kids learn in classes, or you know, things like that. But recognize that the partnerships with other companies are going to become important, and the, you know, engaging on policy and dealing with regulatory issues, however frustrating it might be, is also going to become more important. And that was part of the lesson of the first wave. You mentioned the Tribune partnership. That was critical. We had hundreds of partnerships at AOL. We also engaged with government on policy, and we did persevere because it took us 10 years to break through. But those lessons from the first wave were not really front and center in the second wave,
right.
But we will be, again, front and center in the third wave.
Tell me about the Uberization of all of us, right? Because, you know, when I started working 30, 35 years ago, you got a job, you held a job for as long as you can. Of course, that's changed. Now, soon, people won't even be actually holding jobs, right? They'll be independent contractors for four or five different people. We'll be Uber drivers for all these different companies, and that's going to impact the way we get our health care or the way things like health care are provided to us.
Right. I think that there will still be some people that work full-time for one company and some people that freelance on long-term projects, but a lot of people are now part of this freelance economy. 34% of Americans are part of that freelance economy, and the whole gig economy, where some people call the flexible economy, whether it be driving cars for Uber or Lyft or cleaning houses for Handy or delivering groceries for Instacart, that didn't exist 5 years ago. Now millions of Americans are doing that. It gives them more flexibility in terms of how they think about work, when they choose to work and things like that. And that dynamic is going to take hold in the third wave, which is part of the reason that I talk in the book about this. Isn't just about technology, isn't just about entrepreneurs, isn't just about businesses, corporations. Also about how every one of us takes more control of our life and our career and thinks about the future and tries to position themselves to benefit from this third wave.
Is there a fourth wave, and have you identified what it might be?
Well, I think I'm focused on the third wave for now. There's still a lot of work. It'll take 15 or 20 years for the possibilities in the third wave to develop.
Steve.
But we're in the early stages of innovation.
You'll learn.
In Chicago next week, actually. I'm going to be there for couple of days. I'm speaking at the Union League of Chicago over lunch on Wednesday the 13th. So if anybody in Chicago has some time, I'd love to see you and talk more about the third wave.
Steve, you'll learn as an author now that any good writers are already working on the sequel, so you got to come up with the fourth wave pretty quickly.
Well, since I'm at 57, I just wrote my first book. It might be a while before I write a sequel, but I like your confidence. I hope that this book will strike a chord with millions of people, and they really will find it helpful.
I've got confidence in you. Steve Case, a co-founder of AOL and so much else, and an author now. The name of the book is The Third Wave. I very much appreciate you taking time to join us here on WGN Radio today.
Thanks very much. See you next week in Chicago.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.